Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
This week saw the last gubernatorial debate between Terry McAuliffe and Ken Cuccinelli. But today, the candidate left out gets his say. I'm Maylily Lee. Thanks for joining us. Call it the debate before the debate. A chorus of voices from voters to political pundits called for organizers of last night's debate to include Libertarian Robert Sarvis. The co-sponsors of the event were WDBJ-TV and Virginia Tech, and they say Sarvis did not meet the required polling threshold of an average of 10% as measured by RealClearPolitics.com in the 3 weeks before the debate. So the show in Blacksburg went on without him, and Robert Sarvis joins us live from WVTF in Roanoke to answer some of last night's questions. Welcome, Mr. Sarvis.
Thank you for having me on.
And joining us in our Richmond studio is Shellyann Davis, political reporter for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And a little later, we'll be joined by Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Of course, as always, we're taking your calls to find out what you thought of the debate and to chime in about the race. Let's start with a question from the debate, which was moderated by WDBJ anchor Jean Jodhon. This question on education is asked by panelist and political analyst Harry Wilson of Roanoke College. Ken Cuccinelli responds first.
Both of you acknowledge that SOLs can be a problem with teachers teaching to the test. But how can we be sure that students are learning without testing? So what are your alternatives to the SOLs? And please be specific as you can be.
Sure. I don't want to get rid of the SOLs, Doctor. I want to improve the SOLs. I believe that reform of almost 20 years ago was a great addition to our educational system. I think that it gave us accountability for both taxpayers and teachers. But I don't think that it's working quite as well as we had all envisioned. There's more tests, and we're teaching to the test too much now. I believe we can go to more generalized tests that are obviously, we're still testing children for their progress, but allow us to be more flexible so that schools can test at different times. So they're not all tied to the same schedule because they don't all operate on the same school schedule. I think that's very important. And we'll involve teachers, parents, academics, in putting together a commission to review the SOL tests as they stand now, to reform them so they better evaluate our children and allow us to better evaluate and more fairly evaluate our teachers. I think that's an important change. I've also talked about in education the need to make sure that parents have control over their children's education, particularly where they're in failing schools. We have a great school system in Virginia. We're very blessed in that regard. But every school isn't a success, and parents need to be able to move their children out of that school to another public school, or if necessary, to a private school. What matters is getting that child the best education we possibly can.
Mr. Cuccinelli, thank you. Mr. McAuliffe, your alternatives to the SOLs, and please be specific.
Yeah, what I've said maybe earlier in the year, shorter, more essay type, they clearly aren't working today. They don't work for our parents, they don't work for our students, and they don't work for our teachers. We want accountability with teachers, but there's not accountability today. They're judged on whether students pass an SOL. So they're teaching to tests, and that's not what teachers want to do. When I'm out on the campaign trail and I talk about reforming the SOLs, invariably a teacher will come up and say, I left teaching, Terry, because I was teaching to tests. Our students are being forced to learn how to memorize. Well, memorization is not getting the mind thinking cognitively, creatively. We want critical reasoning going on with our students so that we can build those jobs of the 21st century. I think it's great we memorized the date the man landed on the moon, but you know what? Maybe a short essay about Wallops Island and all the great space exploration we're doing and how Virginia could become the world leader in space exploration, we get an understanding how that child is thinking, and I think that's important. So when I talk about SOLs, earlier, shorter, let's collaboratively come together so that it actually works for our students. Education is important. That's how you build a 21st century economy. My opponent has proposed a constitutional amendment that would allow public school funds to be taken out for private schools. I don't support that. As governor, I don't want to see a penny being taken out of our public schools. We need to build up our public schools. We need to be using our best practices to make Virginia a model in America and the globe for our K through 12 system.
Now, that was from last night's gubernatorial debate. We are joined by Libertarian candidate Robert Sarvis. What are your thoughts on the SOL tests in 90 seconds?
Well, it's pretty clear from talking to parents, teachers, and students that the SOLs are have become more of a burden than a benefit. And I think I'm the only person who's calling for getting rid of them entirely. I have the support of a lot of people on that. When you have the government trying to architect these assessment tests, they go for easy things that are easily quantifiable, and they totally give short shrift to many of the other things that we want to be teaching our kids and inculcating in our kids, such as leadership skills, entrepreneurship, working in groups, critical thinking, all sorts of skills like that. So we really don't want to get into the situation where the government is architecting these assessment tests. We don't need assessment. The government assessing cell phones. If we did, we probably would never have gotten the iPhone. So what we need to do is to move to a more competitive and open education market, where parents and children have choice, where they can take their kids from failing schools, move them into schools that are better, and in a system that has that, we will develop through the marketplace better assessment tests. And that's the best way to do things. So, you know, I think that Terry McAuliffe is really demagoguing the issue on the public school funding, because it's not going to decrease on a per pupil basis the money that's being spent on public school students.
Thank you. Also last night, the candidates discussed the topic of gun control. Here's WDBJ anchor Chris Hurst. Terry McAuliffe answers first this time.
Ted in Blacksburg wants to know, do you support or oppose universal background checks on every gun sale, even on private sales where neither seller or purchaser has a federal firearms license? And Mark from Martinsville wants to know whether you support a ban on high-capacity magazines and so-called assault rifles.
Let me answer this as first as a parent, as a spouse. I think it's important to understand when we drop our children off at school or we drop our loved ones off at work, we want to make sure that our children and our loved ones are safe. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner and I'm a hunter. But I support universal background checks. This is my opponent and I differ on that. I'm wearing my pin today in honor and memory of all of those folks here at Virginia Tech that went through that tragedy. You know, the other day, a young man came to see me, Colin Goddard. Colin Goddard was in one of the classrooms. He was shot 4 times. He still has 3 bullets in his body. I think it's critical, imperative, for every community and every elected official to do the best things that we can. Some people should not own guns.
All right,
we should have mental illness checks, domestic abuse.
That's your 60 seconds. Mr. Cuccinelli.
You know, what happened here at Virginia Tech is a tragedy that still affects everyone in Virginia. But none of what you've asked about would have affected that tragedy. I've been one of the leading experts on mental health issues in the General Assembly as Attorney General, and I would be as governor in Richmond. And I care an awful lot about that community. I've spent more than 15 years working to help people suffering from mental illness, long before I ran for office. We need to do more in that direction to make sure less of those tragedies happen, because they're all tied in one way or another to mental health failures. I also would note that I am a strong advocate of enforcing our gun laws. Virginia is literally one of the best states in the country at doing that, and I'll continue that as governor. I'm an A-rated NRA candidate. I'm running against the only F-rated candidate running statewide, and that's Terry McAuliffe. And his allies are running an ad right now in Northern Virginia that falsely claims that we can get safety through some of these restrictions
right.
of law-abiding citizens.
Mr. Sarvis, your response to these gun control issues in 60 seconds.
Well, I think it's important that we have evidence-based policy and we not legislate on the basis of emotion. Obviously, what happened at Virginia Tech was a tragedy, but a lot, pretty much the vast majority of the gun control proposals that people are talking about wouldn't have affected, wouldn't have prevented that tragedy. And for the most part, the evidence suggests that all of these things have very, very little effect on gun violence. And so what we ought to do is focus on things that do work and not burdening law-abiding gun owners just to make ourselves feel good. The effects of policy are more important than the well-meaning intentions. And so we should make sure that, you know, mental health spending has high returns. That's one of the reasons my health care proposal focuses on moving funding from expensive and expensive spending programs that have few positive outcomes towards things that show much higher returns, like mental health.
Also, last night's gubernatorial debate included jobs and job creation with a question from Bob Denton, political analyst at Virginia Tech. This question is answered first by Ken Cuccinelli.
Well, in the past few decades, certain areas of the Commonwealth, particularly South Side and Southwest Virginia, has been hit very hard economically, losing jobs and industries, as you know. What in your job plan will specifically help the hard-hit areas here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, particularly South Side and Southwest Virginia?
Well, I certainly agree with you that they have had the hardest time economically over a number of years. My jobs program was designed first and foremost to maximize the amount of job creation in the private sector without the government picking winners and losers that we possibly could. That's what we started the whole campaign with. It's what we still advance as one of the most important things I'm campaigning on. And that matters the most in the parts of Virginia that are struggling the most, like Southside, where we have our longest term unemployment, and Southwest. And let's face it, they're also suffering first and worst from a lot of the regulatory onslaught out of Washington. The war on coal hurts Southwest Virginia. It is a war on our poor in Virginia, and my opponent is all in, as he likes to say, on it. He said when he ran for governor last time that he never wanted another coal plant built. And last month, when a regulation came out from the EPA that would make sure that happens, eventually he admitted that he supported it, and that's exactly where he is. I have fought that kind of onslaught from Washington that kills jobs and kills opportunities in the parts of Virginia we need it the most. We need it the most. And you look over in Southside Virginia, where an enormous proportion of the electricity is from coal-fired electricity generation. It is critically related to job creation for manufacturing, which we'd like to see coming back in that part of Virginia. And it won't happen if we don't have long-term, reliable, low-cost electricity that I've been fighting for.
Thank you, Mr. Cuccinelli. Mr. McAuliffe, 90 seconds.
These communities absolutely need help. They've lost tobacco, furniture, textile. We've got to focus on these communities. We've got to open these communities up to new business opportunities. Number one, the Medicaid expansion would help tremendously. Millions of dollars would be invested in these communities with quality, life-saving care. Why do many people get forced into poverty? A lot of it's through their health care costs. Number two, transportation. I supported the governor's transportation plan. My opponent sided with the Tea Party and tried to derail the governor's transportation plan. If you want to open up communities, we got a four-lane 58 all the way out. We got to get trucks off of 81. I support the Coalfield Expressway. My opponent doesn't. But open it up through transportation. I also talk about what we need to do. Broadband, cell phone access. I was in Highland County recently. I was out of cell phone coverage for an hour and 10 minutes. It's hard to grow a community if you can't get cell phone coverage. I talk about the great work being done here at Virginia Tech. Carbon capture, storage, so important. In fact, I just met with a professor here, Michael Karmas. The idea that we could create all of these new jobs with CCS technology is really spectacular. It's there. It's in front of us. We need to invest in that research. We need to keep it going. And I commend Virginia Tech for the outstanding work that they have done. But you can't grow an economy and bring in new professors. It was my opponent who actually sued the University of Virginia because he disagreed with a scientist's view on climate change. It cost UVA $600,000.
Right,
you cannot
time.
Grow an economy by suing scientists.
And for those of you just tuning in, we're listening to parts of the gubernatorial debate from last night. We're asking Libertarian candidate Robert Sarvis to join in. Mr. Sarvis, you have 90 seconds to lay out your job plan.
Yeah, thank you. So the economy is suffering from a lot of problems right now, and some of that comes from the federal government, but some of it comes from the state government as well, and we're shooting ourselves in the foot and making it harder for employers to employ people and for jobless people to get back to work. So one of the biggest problems we have is cronyism and corporatism in our tax and regulatory policy. Our entire legal code is riddled with provisions where private industries have used the tax and regulatory provisions to insulate themselves from competition. That closes off markets. That means it makes it harder for our economy to grow and to create jobs. And so what we have to do is not try and pick winners and losers through the government, but get government back to the rule of law and focusing on making sure markets are open and competitive, to make sure that there are low barriers to entry, that entrepreneurs and innovators and small businesses can compete on the same level playing field as large corporations. Also, we should move away from things like the income tax. If we want to worry about jobs and grow jobs, we can't be taxing employment. This is a tax that increases the cost of employment to employers, and we should get rid of mandates on employers that just drive up the cost of employment. This is a very clear principle, and it's one thing that, you know, when Terry talks about all the tax credits he wants to use, well, who's going to pay for those? That means higher taxes on the rest of us. A lot of those tax credits are going to rich people. They're paid for by working families, and so that's going to make the problem actually worse.
Thank you so much, Robert Sarvis. We've covered jobs, gun control, and SOLs, three topics from last night's gubernatorial debate, which was co-sponsored by Virginia Tech and WDBJ-TV in Roanoke. We couldn't help but notice in that television market, the first ad following the debate was yours, followed by another Sarvis ad from a PAC. That's pretty significant, getting some backing, at least in terms of advertising dollars, from a third party.
Yeah, it was absolutely helpful. The PAC, it was kind of a surprise to us. We read about it in a online journalist piece, and we only finally saw it yesterday. And so it was very nice to have that support, and it's a very positive message, and we appreciate it.
And it's being deemed a purple PAC whose interest is covering the demographic who are fiscally conservative and socially tolerant.
That's right. It's a growing demographic. There are a lot of people out there who are very frustrated with the two parties kind of becoming extreme versions of themselves. And there's a vast middle. You know, 40% from the very beginning of this race wanted another candidate. And Virginia's become a purple state, and I guess, the purple candidate.
We have more coming up in the next two breaks. We're joined by Shelley-Ann Davis, political reporter for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, along with Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We're here talking with libertarian Robert Sarvis. This reminder before we go into break that you're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. You can go to virginiapublicradio.org for any archival shows. For transparency, we do want to acknowledge that the Virginia Education Association has endorsed Terry McAuliffe, and that organization is an underwriter of this program. Stay with us. We'll have more Virginia Conversations, more guests, and more calls from you coming up in the next 20 minutes of Virginia Conversations. We'll be right back. And we are back. Today we're discussing the race for governor in Virginia between Terry McAuliffe, Ken Cuccinelli, and Robert Sarvis. Our guests are Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning from the Star City of the South.
And Shelley-Ann Davis, political reporter for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star.
Good morning.
Also with us is the libertarian candidate for governor, Robert Sarvis.
Hello.
Good morning to you. One of the topics from last night that I'd like to pick up on here is SOLs. We all remember when Terry McAuliffe said at the mental health forum, the gubernatorial mental health forum held in Richmond, that he wanted to eliminate the SOLs. Pretty much right after that, he was saying, let's eliminate the SOLs in their current form. You have said, Mr. Sarvis, that you really are the only one left who wants to totally get rid of SOLs.
That's right. Wherever I go, it's not just that we're teaching to the test. That's certainly one aspect to it. But it also means that we're giving short shrift to a lot of other things that we want to be teaching our kids. And it also means that the system is actually easily gamed, putting students, underperforming students, into certain classes that don't have SOLs so that they're not bringing down the school numbers. So we just really need to move away from these sorts of assessment programs that really create perverse incentives.
Jeff?
One of the more interesting developments in recent days, I think, may have been a Republican news conference earlier this week in Richmond, in which House Republicans, who have been forceful in their support for SOLs, are now forceful in their support for reforms of the SOL system, the entire hierarchy. Forgive me if I seem somewhat skeptical, if not cynical, about this, but I suspect that even the Republicans, for whom this was an article of faith for a long, long time, recognize that there's now a good deal of pushback over the SOLs, not just by the teachers who administer them and the students who take them, but the parents who are wondering what exactly their children are learning.
Yeah, parents tell me that, you know, their children just are not having fun at school, that the SOLs have basically created a regime where there's no more fun in learning, and it's all about memorization. And after the tests are administered for several weeks, at the end of the school year, they're basically twiddling their thumbs. And it's just, you know, this is not how education is supposed to be run. Right now, it really seems like politicians and bureaucrats want to be seen as doing something, and so we have these all sorts of so-called improvements that really simply enable politicians and bureaucrats to say, hey, we're doing something, and aren't aimed at actual student learning.
And both candidates, the principal candidates, have acknowledged that the improvement is needed. That even in the case of Cuccinelli, he said last night the teachers are, you know, there needs to be a revamping of the test.
Well, perhaps someone will suggest we reinstate the McGruffy reader.
Now, moving on to the issue of spending, a legitimate question was asked around the two of them. This did not show up in one of our clips today. However, the point was made. Terry McAuliffe, you're looking for a windfall from the Medicaid money that may or may not be coming in. And you, Mr. Cuccinelli, have not yet outlined where your money is coming from. Now, both of them claim to have laid out their plans, and yet both of them say you haven't laid out your plans about the other. So with respect to spending and taxation and, you know, an alleged $1.4 billion in tax reductions in the Cuccinelli camp, help us sort through all of this.
Well, if I can just point out, I think it's appalling that no one's asking Terry McAuliffe not just that the money is uncertain to be coming, but that it's also supposed to be used for Medicaid. So he can't be talking about using it for all these other things. So I think the fact that people aren't pressing him on that aspect to it is kind of strange. But yeah, this is the typical MO of Democrats and Republicans. Democrats talk about all the spending programs they want to do without saying how they're going to pay for it, and Republicans talk about huge tax cuts without telling people how they're going to pay for it. My spending plans and tax plans do not talk about, you know, putting huge numbers on the table. And, you know, my view is we reform programs to make them better, to make them more cost effective for taxpayers, saving money for taxpayers. And we can talk about cuts at that point. We should move towards more efficient taxation, but we can do that in a revenue neutral manner. And we can talk about tax cuts and spending cuts as they become feasible.
That's Robert Sarvis. Go ahead, Jeff.
This is not intended as a defense of Mr. McAuliffe, but perhaps an explanation on Medicaid. His point, maybe not made artfully, is that the state would have to spend fewer dollars supporting Medicaid because of the beneficence, the greater beneficence of the federal government. And the $500 million figure he has kicked around as a result of this freeing up, he thinks that can be used to finance other programs. Another issue, I think, to which Mr. Sarvis and Mr. Cuccinelli have spoken on a number of occasions, and that is this antiquated tax system that Virginia has. For every tax credit on the books, there's a moneyed interest behind it. But there is a tax code in this state that in some respects, reflects ancient Virginia. It wasn't too long ago when Jim Gilmore was standing for governor in 1997. He was talking about doing away with the car tax, a tax on hard assets that goes back to actually the colonial era. We still have the car tax. We haven't had tax modernization. To his credit, Mr. Cuccinelli is talking about fully committing the governor's office to some type of update of the system. That is significant. Whether it would be successful in a Cuccinelli administration is another question.
Shelley and Davis.
Yeah, Jeff is right. I mean, there have been a number of studies done of Virginia's tax system. For instance, we don't tax services, which is something that if we did, it could bring in, I think, millions upon millions of dollars, according to some of these studies. And it's some of those studies that Cuccinelli cites when he talks about eliminating certain tax loopholes and tax credits that have gone onto the books over the years, and they never get checked again. They sort of get there, and it's very hard to get them off. So, but to get back to your original point about how they're both making these broad spending promises about without a lot of dollar figures attached. Yeah, I mean, that's come up. That came up in the debate last night. That came up in their second debate in McLean a few weeks ago. And yeah, they both have done that. McAuliffe, yeah, says that everything that he wants to do would be paid for if we expanded Medicaid.
And he also added in this recent bite, we need to look at efficiencies in government, which is very broad.
Right. And politicians are very fond of saying that. People have been looking for efficiencies in state government for years and years. So, but Cuccinelli hasn't proposed a lot of new spending, but to the extent that he has, I think part of it would come from these unnamed, he hasn't specified which tax credits that he would get rid of. So each one of them has put a price tag on the other one's plan, but they use both of them, the most dire and wild figures that they could possibly come up with.
Oftentimes, McAuliffe is characterized as being vague. Is that a fair characterization? I know Cuccinelli has borne the brunt of his own characterizations, but is he no more vague than an average politician running for statewide office?
Well, Jeff? Everett McKinley Dirksen, the Republican leader of the United States Senate, was fond of saying, "My first unbending principle is flexibility." And I think it's clear to say, it's fair to say that Mr. McAuliffe is interested in maximum flexibility. For, among other reasons, his inexperience in Virginia government and politics. He has clearly acquired a considerable amount of knowledge about Virginia and its government and its evolving culture since his first unsuccessful campaign for governor 4 years ago. But there's still a lot, he would say, he has to learn.
Another topic that we heard, gun control, and you had an opportunity to respond, Mr. Sarvis. What was interesting about both of the candidates last night is that they didn't specifically answer. The questions were very, very specific, relating to specific ban and that type of thing. So they were generally answered, not specifically answered. However, could the two be painted as being that far apart? McAuliffe said, "I'm a gun owner. I'm a hunter." And of course, Cuccinelli said, "I'm an A-rated NRA candidate." Jeff?
Mr. McAuliffe, an F-rated NRA candidate, but taking a position that not too long ago would have been considered perilous for a statewide candidate. McAuliffe favors a universal background check that would include closing the so-called gun show loophole. It is clear that McAuliffe is gambling that this increasingly suburban state in which we live is increasingly comfortable with additional controls on firearms. This is something clearly that is going to be resisted in rural Virginia, but McAuliffe's gamble is there are a lot more votes in Fairfax County than there are in Franklin.
And I think that Cuccinelli also, didn't really directly answer that. He wanted to focus on the mental health aspect of of, I guess, some of the shootings that we've had. And, you know, that's something that he has focused on a lot in his career. And one of the few spending areas that he has said that he would be interested in is shifting money around within Medicaid and within, you know, what Virginia has for that to put more money into mental health programs. But his argument last night and his argument generally when you ask him about guns and gun control is that the focus needs to be on mental health.
Which is an anomaly among Republican candidates, the fact that he is so pro-mental health. That generally falls in the purview of Democrats. And he has been a staunch advocate of mental health.
Well, May Lilly, on this point of gun control and Mr. Cuccinelli's position on mental health, I think to some degree the Republicans recognize that there are some perils associated with with forceful support of firearms rights, and that Cuccinelli is using mental health as a way to kind of take some of the sharp edges off of that.
Now, earlier we talked about a PAC that paid for an ad on your behalf, Robert Sarvis. And for those of you just joining in, he is the Libertarian candidate for Virginia governor. We had earlier an opportunity for him to pretend like he was taking part in the debate, and we had a chance to hear your views on about three of the topics from last night's gubernatorial debate. I would like to talk more in general about the PAC itself. Party Chairman Ed Crane, a former Libertarian Party chairman, he said, quote, "Cuccinelli is a socially intolerant, hard-right conservative with little respect for civil liberties. McAuliffe is a big government liberal with little respect for economic liberties." And thus, he is behind the ads that went up on your behalf, Mr. Sarvis. I find this interesting, Jeff. In fact, the placement was really right there at the end of the debate, at least in the Roanoke market it was. Your thoughts on the purple pack?
Well, what does it say that a Libertarian candidate running for governor in Virginia can rely on the beneficence of outsiders, money deep-pocketed outsiders, to advocate in his behalf? Perhaps it suggests a growing sophistication within the Libertarian movement, and maybe it's also a gamble that this is a chance to torpedo perhaps Mr. Cuccinelli.
All right. Mr. Sarvis?
Well, I don't think it's about torpedoing any particular candidate. It's about we're the only campaign that's running a positive message that's based on doing what's right for Virginia voters. So this isn't about attacking any one candidate. Both the other candidates are wrong Virginia, and we're the only ones who are putting forward principled policies. You all were talking about taxing and spending. How can we talk about reducing spending without talking about all the money that's wasted on the drug war, all the tax revenue that's lost on not having it legal and taxed, marijuana, all the economic activity we're losing by rendering young men unemployable with criminal records? How can we not talk about or when you talk about good tax policy and tax reform, how can we not talk about moving away from the income tax? And you're absolutely right that the sales tax we ought to move to a uniform consumption tax on all goods and services. And when you put the two together, moving away from an income tax and moving towards a broader based sales tax, that can have huge benefits to the economy.
Shelley-Ann, you've been covering this for a while now, and a lot of people who are in your shoes as a journalist might find that this is a fun race to be covering.
Other people might. I personally prefer to cover races that are more focused on policy. Policy is something that you can sort of really get your hands around, and you can explain this is what this person would actually do if he was elected. And I feel like this race has been a lot more focused instead on personality issues and on, you know, the person that each candidate is versus the person that the opponent says that candidate is. And that's less pleasant to cover, I find. I don't enjoy it as much. It's much more just, you know, people attacking each other, and it doesn't, I think, really get down to where you can say, this is what this person will do to you and for you if he is elected.
Can you think back to a time when you were covering a campaign that was enjoyable to cover?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, if I didn't enjoy covering campaigns, I wouldn't be in this job. I mean, a lot of campaigns are enjoyable to cover. I feel like this one has been just more focused on personality, you know.
Which ones were less focused?
Gosh. Well, if you look at statewide races, I would say that the 2009 governor's race was pretty policy focused. You could say last year's Senate race was pretty policy focused. You know, I would say this one is unusual and in its personality focus.
How much attention have you personally been paying to the Sarvis campaign? If journalists were covering the people who are running issues based campaigns, well, we might have you might have more fun and we might have a better discussion throughout the 4 or 5 months I've been in the race.
Jeff,
well, I don't know
go ahead.
Whether campaigns are supposed to be akin to, you know, high table debate at Oxford. I think that's important. The hubbub of politics. There's a level of entertainment to this. Clearly, historically, has been a level of entertainment in politics. Thomas Nast wouldn't have created all those great cartoons if he didn't find something witty, clever, and humorous about all this. But I think this campaign, the challenges that the candidates face notwithstanding, is very much a reflection of what Virginia is becoming, how increasingly national in nature its politics have become. We have candidates who are come-heres. I am a come-here. And the majority, a narrow majority of people who live in this state are come-heres. And this has changed the culture and traditions, political cultures and traditions of Virginia. If you want a glaring example of how it's driving this race this year, look at the effect that the government shutdown has had on the Republican campaigns. You know, it wasn't too long ago that elections were held in Virginia, this brigadoon-like misc would enswirl the state, and suddenly the outside world didn't count. That's not the case this year.
That's Jeff Shapiro. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We want to thank independent candidate Libertarian Robert Sarvis for joining us today. Thanks for being with us. And we want to welcome listeners hearing us on WVRU. Welcome to the Virginia Conversations family of stations. You're based in Radford University. We're glad to have you with us. And this reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. You can also find out about upcoming topics by checking us out on Facebook. Just search for Virginia Conversations and like us. We'll be back with more in about 90 seconds.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
And welcome back. Today we're talking about the race for governor in Virginia. Our guests are Shellyann Davis, political reporter with the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, and Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We'll begin with a call from Williamsburg. Good morning to you, Martin.
Yeah, I'm calling from Williamsburg. I've listened to the show up to this point, and it's pretty obvious that Mr. Sarvis is a very young man. He's got most of the Republican platform in terms of economic liberty and being able to do what you want with your money. He's got that program. On the other hand, he's criticizing Mr. Cuccinelli because he is against women's rights, abortion rights, and that kind of freedom that the libertarians propose. You can do whatever you want personally and do what you want. He neglects the connection between a moral society where individual rights, a moral society and individual rights, the right to, you know, to your life, the state can't, abortion rights, easy abortion. He neglects the fact that over 50% of abortions are on women. And he talks about the rights of the individual. When does somebody become an individual? In Mr. Sarvis' view.
And so our question for you, Martin, is who will you be voting for when you go to the polls today, this week?
There's no question who I'll vote for. I mean, I wouldn't vote for Sarvis on a bet. I'm a lifelong Catholic. I believe in really, you know, that the basis of a strong society is strong religious principles.
So you'll be voting for Cuccinelli, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, there's
okay.
no question.
Well, we appreciate
this guy is going to drain enough things off. He'll destroy our state. We have a right to work state. How does Sarvis feel about right to work? And what about immigration? I mean, these are the kind of things. He's going to destroy the right to work because he'll end up getting the McAuliffe elected.
All right. Well, we thank you so much for your call today, Martin. Appreciate your calling in with your comments. And we have another call from Mark from Norfolk. Good morning to you, Mark. I think we've lost Mark, but Mark, you are more than welcome to try again. We usually have calls that are dropped, and you're welcome to dial again to get in there. Let's go to you, Jeff, relating to sort of the chord that Sarvis has struck. Is it a fair assumption to say that he could be siphoning off Republican votes?
Well, polls, they are curiosities, snapshots in time. They certainly suggest that is the case. But Mr. Cuccinelli's problem with the Republican base extends beyond some of the more libertarian-inclined Republicans. There is that shrinking pool of centrists, comparatively centrist Republicans, who are abandoning his candidacy. A number of them are publicly associated with the McAuliffe campaign. John Chichester, former chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. Vince Callahan, former chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. So there is a larger challenge facing Ken Cuccinelli in this campaign, and a lot of it has to do with his stance on social and cultural issues, abortion rights among them.
Mark is back. I knew he would be. Good morning, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I read a piece by George Will yesterday in the Virginian Pilot, in which he was very positive about Robert Sarvis, and I was interested if anyone wanted to comment on this very hardcore Republican saying the things he did about Robert Sarvis. And I'll tell you, that piece convinced me to vote for Sarvis.
And who would you have normally voted for if there weren't a third party candidate?
I was leaning towards McAuliffe. But I had reservations about him just because of his lack of experience and some other problems that he's had.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. I'll assume, Jeff, you did not get a chance to see that column.
Yeah, I did see that column. And
look at me. I was assuming too much.
I got the distinct impression that George Will's platitudes notwithstanding, one of the things I think he finds off-putting about Mr. Cuccinelli is his elbows out style. It reminds me of something that was said about a fiery populist Democrat who ran for governor many years ago, Henry Howell. People were afraid, it was said, that if they invited him into their homes, he would break the furniture in the china.
Earlier, I had asked Shellian about her coverage of this particular campaign. What about you? Does this one stand out, or is this business as usual?
I don't know that this is a particularly underwhelming campaign. As I think I said before the break, this is a campaign that is very much a reflection of what Virginia is becoming. This is a purple state. When a lot more people participate in this state's elections, and remember, we're talking about an increasingly diverse electorate, Democrats do a lot better. There was a good deal of thought, and I embrace this, that a lower turnout, as gubernatorial elections tend to be, would work to the advantage of Mr. Cuccinelli. It appears that may not be the case, given some of the divisions within the Republican ranks. So theatrics notwithstanding, I think there's a lot going on in this campaign that's very interesting, and will have an effect long term. Assume for purposes of this conversation that the Democrats sweep, and there seems to be agreement in both parties that that's a distinct possibility. That means that in Virginia, we will end up with a governing template similar to Washington's, an executive branch controlled by the Democrats, Senate controlled by the Democrats, and a House controlled by Republicans, by divided Republicans. It has made for a considerable amount of inaction at the federal level. One wonders what it might mean at the state level.
Shelley-Ann?
I didn't mean to imply that this was an uninteresting race, because it is in many ways. And one of the things that does interest me about it is sort of what is going on internally with the GOP in the state. Cuccinelli got the nomination instead of Bill Bowling, who was considered more moderate and more appealing to the sort of Chamber of Commerce Republicans, sort of the business wing of the Republican Party. And Cuccinelli is a social conservative. And, you know, I feel like we're sort of watching and to see what's going to happen with that, because I think many conservatives in the Republican Party have been saying, well, we would be winning these races if our candidates were more conservative. And I think that, they've got Cuccinelli. You can't really say that it gets much more conservative than that. So it'll be interesting to me to see if they're right.
We have a call from Jason from Richmond. Good morning, Jason. How are you, Jason?
I can't complain. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to call in, and this is kind of just more of a observation on the general tone of stuff. But with the establishment candidates, these guys are, they're close to being scoundrels, right? I mean, they're under investigation. The old governor McDonald is more under investigation at the moment. But Cuccinelli, he represents an extremist, far side of things. And I just don't understand why, the press doesn't hit on this more. I mean, these are extreme candidates that don't represent, the good things for people. I mean, and overall, polls agree that, the American people don't agree with them. I mean, I'm not sure of the polls total for Virginia, but I would imagine it's roughly the same. I mean, nobody wants these extremist people in office, but they keep getting airtime. I don't understand why the press doesn't do more about that. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, they kind of just let them run.
Let me clarify what you are saying by these extremists getting airtime. Specifically, what are you referring to?
Well, I'm just that the established Democrats and Republicans, I mean, they're both on such extreme ends that, it's basically grid. I mean, obviously gridlock. I mean, everybody knows that. But, I mean, I feel like the press could do a better job. And kudos to you for getting Sarbus on here. I don't agree with all the parts of libertarianism, but the main points he brings up, I do agree with, and they seem to affect regular people. Whereas the points that Cuccinelli at least is bringing up, I mean, these represent oppressed minorities and stuff like that. That and this was his platform or whatever. As far as his issues on sodomy law and things of that nature. I mean, I think that's obviously targeted at homosexuals, and that's absurd. I mean, in this day and age, how can we take that seriously? And I just kind of wish the press would do a better job of, pointing that out or saying, how can you justify this position, given the temperament of people these days? I don't know if the politicians are just way behind the people at this point, but I wish the press would drag them, up to the front lines with everybody, and so they can stop
We want to go ahead and wrap you up there,
hand,
Jason.
But, I mean, but they're not really the issues at hand.
Thank
Nobody
you so much for calling us, Jason.
Like
we're going to have to cut you off there, but we really do appreciate your call in this morning. I want to be sure to get to some of the other callers as well. Good morning, Marilyn from Roanoke. How are you, Marilyn?
Very well, thank you, and I'm enjoying listening to your program.
Thank you.
I have a direct question for Mr. Sarvis, and I hope I will get a direct answer to.
Well, unfortunately, we've already said goodbye to Mr. Sarvis, but perhaps you have a comment.
You know, I am in a dilemma who I will vote for this time. And my thoughts are, if Mr. Sarvis was not running, who would he vote for? Puccinelli or McAuliffe?
I asked him that when he last appeared, and he said he wouldn't vote for either.
Well,
so
see,
hopefully that helps.
Vote.
What about you? Who are you going to vote for?
I think I'll go for Puccinelli.
Okay. We appreciate your call in this morning. Thank you for the question. And we have a call from Mark from Portsmouth. Good morning to you, Mark.
I intend to write in the name of Lieutenant Governor William T. Bowling. I know he's not going to win the election on my write-in alone, but he's a qualified candidate who has held public office, which Mr. McAuliffe and Mr. Sarvis have not. And he is a moderate Republican, which Mr. Cuccinelli is not. He's a man who can work across the political aisle, and that's important at all levels of politics.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call, Mark. We appreciate that. Shellyann?
You know, I think it would have been really interesting to see what would have happened if Bill Bowling had stayed in the race. You know, he sort of flirted with an independent bid earlier this year and decided in the end not to. And I wonder if he regrets that, given the way things have played out. And he has not, however, mounted any sort of effort to get a write-in campaign going. Not that that would be terribly likely to be successful. I don't think that typically is in Virginia. But it would have been really interesting to watch.
What pressures do you think either Jeff or Shellyann were in place for Bowling to drop out?
I think money. I mean, it's really hard to raise money if you don't have the backing of a party.
That hasn't stopped Sarvis.
Well, look at the amount Sarvis has versus the amount that the other two candidates have received. And a lot of what McAuliffe and Cuccinelli both have gotten from they've both gotten a lot of money from the national parties, the governors' associations and other national political party groups.
Yeah. Jeff?
This is an unusual year, and I suspect that's one of the reasons why Mr. Sarvis is doing unusually well for a third-party candidate. It'll be interesting to see if he can sustain this performance and if we have a governor who is elected by plurality. That would be the first time since about 1965 that that occurred. So there will be some history made, perhaps more significant than we anticipate.
And in our last 2 to 3 minutes, Jeff, this is not related to the candidates specifically, but to voting in Virginia. Has anything shifted in terms of accessibility for voters, allowing people to get out to the polls and making it easy for voters to either register or to show up or to do write-ins or to absentee ballots? Has anything shifted in the last year or so?
Well, there was a big push, courtesy of the federal government, to make it as easy as possible to register. There was the big push towards motor voter, which had been resisted by a governor named George Allen. And there were spectacular increases in voter registration. In recent years, we have seen, and this occurred in the most recent legislative session, there are perceived obstacles being raised to exercising the franchise. This photo ID law that will kick in 2014, pushed by the Republican nominee for Attorney General, Mark Obenchain. Republicans insist they're only trying to protect the integrity of the electoral process to minimize the likelihood of fraud. There seems to be little evidence that that's a problem in Virginia, but there seems to be considerable evidence that this changing electorate is a problem for the Republican Party.
And that's about all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and Shellyann Davis, political reporter with the Fredericksburg Freelance Star. And earlier we were joined by Libertarian candidate for governor Robert Sarvis. Thanks to you for listening and for joining in our conversation. We appreciate your calls this morning. Next Friday at 9, another round of politics as we count down to Election Day 2013. Hope you will join us for next Friday's edition of Virginia Conversations. This reminder that past editions of our program can be seen online. Just look at virginiaconversations.org and you'll find virginiapublicradio.org and you'll find Virginia Conversations there. Also, we have a Facebook page. Just like us at Virginia Conversations, and you can find out about upcoming topics on the program as well. And we want to thank our newest addition to the family of public radio stations over at Radford. Thank you for joining us, WVRU. That's 89.9 from the campus of Radford University. I'm Maylily Lee. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Virginia Conversations. We'll be on the air next week.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.